In the whole Bible, only one man is identified as a man after God's own heart. Anybody know who that was?
David.
Yeah, King David of Israel. Wouldn't you like to be called a man or a woman after God's own heart? Wouldn't you like to be called a church after God's own heart? Well, in a few weeks, we're going to begin a series on the life of David. And we're going to look at exactly what it was about David that made him a man after God's own heart. But before that, starting next week, we're going to begin a six-week series on the mission and the values of Elgin Evangelical Free Church. And when we pursue that mission and we live those values, we become a people together after God's own heart, helping His love reach to the other side. Now today, I'm going to try and combine and do both at the same time. So today we're going to take an episode from the life of David, and we're going to look at the mission he pursued and the values he lived that can make him and make us as men and women and make us as a church a people after God's own heart. The story comes from 2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 6 to 21. David then led his men to Jerusalem to fight against the Jebusites, the original inhabitants of the land who were living there. The Jebusites taunted David, saying, "You'll never get in here. Even the blind and the lame could keep you out." For the Jebusites thought they were safe. But David captured the fortress of Zion, which is now called the City of David. On the day of the attack, David said to his troops, "I hate those lame and blind Jebusites. Whoever attacks them should strike by going into the city through the water tunnel." And that's the origin of the saying, "The blind and the lame may not enter this house." So David made the fortress his home, and he called it the City of David. He extended the city starting at the supporting terraces and working inward. And David became more and more powerful because the Lord God of heaven's armies was with him. Then the king Hiram of Tyre sent messengers to David along with cedar timber and carpenters and stonemasons, and they built David a palace. And David realized that the Lord had confirmed him as king over Israel and had blessed his kingdom for the sake of his people Israel. Well, when the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king of Israel, they mobilized all their forces to capture him. But David was told they were coming, so he went into the stronghold. Now the Philistines arrived and spread out across the valley of Rephaim. So David asked the Lord, "Should I go out to fight the Philistines? Will you hand them over to me?" Then the Lord replied to David, "Yes, go ahead. I will certainly hand them over to you." So David went to Baal-perazim and defeated the Philistines there. "The Lord did it," David exclaimed. "He burst through my enemies like a raging flood." So he named that place Baal-perazim, which means "the Lord who bursts through." The Philistines had abandoned their idols there, so David and his men confiscated them. This is a thrilling adventure story. I mean, you got a little guy overcoming overwhelming odds. It's kind of like a Mission Impossible script. So, was it impossible? I mean, did this story really happen? Or is it just a biblical fairy tale? Well, the good news is archaeology has showed the story really did happen. On the screen behind me is a picture. A few years ago, archaeologists in Jerusalem discovered part of the ruins of David's palace. Now, you can see how big they are because there's a teeny person in the middle of the screen. So these are the ruins of the palace that was at least partially built in this morning's story. Now, the truth is, the archaeologists backed into finding David's palace because first, they found the retaining wall that his palace was built on. And there's a picture of the retaining wall. It's called the stepping stone structure because it was both the retaining wall that the foundation of the palace was built on. It was also part of the wall around Jerusalem. And there was ways to get from the top to the bottom. As the next slide will show, you see the remains of that staircase that runs down. This really happened. In fact, here's an artist's rendition of what it would have looked like during David's time, and that's his palace leading down to the city below. And that picture doesn't come from a Christian book. That picture comes from your PBS show, Nova. They did a science special on the archaeological discoveries in Jerusalem. Let's listen in to this Nova interview with Israeli archaeologist Elat Mazar. She said, Jerusalem at the time of King David and King Solomon was very much like the Bible describes. It was monumental. The construction was massive. They used the Phoenicians. Now, remember that because we're going to come back to it later. They used the Phoenicians with their capability and skill to build two palaces, King David's and later the Palace of King Solomon, and the wall of Jerusalem around those structures that we just looked at, and Elat Mazar is the one who discovered them. Now, the interview goes on. King David captured a Canaanite town, that's our story this morning, that was very centralized and was very important. He did so purposefully and didn't kill most of the people. Now, that's important too. He continued most of the existing administration, and it gave him strength. Jerusalem continued to be a great metropolitan center and to serve as the capital of the Israelites. So this archaeologist is describing what the Bible story was all about. The archaeologist was asked the next question. How important to your work is the text of the Bible? And she answered, it's the historical source. So important, so fantastically written. The question is, how much of the reality that the Bible describes can we archaeologists reveal? Did you get that? She said, it's the reality that the Bible describes, and all we're doing is discovering it. Often you find structures that were constructed in ancient times, and the stones, the remains they speak, we need to listen to what they say. This thrilling action-adventure story really happened. It's the story of a time when a man named David took great risks against great odds to give God great glory. Because that was his mission, and that's how he lived his values. It's the story of how the people of God, whether the people of Israel and David's today, or the people of Elgin Evangelical Free Church today, pursue this mission and live these values, we become a people after God's own heart. So let's jump in and see what we can learn from David captured, defeating the Jebusites and capturing Jerusalem. How can we dare to overcome great odds for God? Well, our first point, make God's honor my priority. Pretty simple, make God's honor my priority. You know what? God's honor is not my top priority. You know what my top priority is? Me. My top priority is me. And the only way God's honor becomes my top priority is if I deliberately make that decision, if I renew that decision every day of my life, and I discipline myself to pursue that vision of making God's glory my top priority. Have you done that? Is that the way that we live? Do we make that decision, renew that decision, and discipline ourselves to live for God's honor being our top priority? King David of Israel made that commitment as a teenager, and he lived it until it was as natural to live for God's honor as it was for him to breathe. So the very first verse in our text today, then David led his men to Jerusalem to fight against the Jebusites, the original inhabitants of the land, who were living there. David had just been acclaimed king over all of Israel. He's 37 years old. He's just spent 10 years running and hiding in the wilderness as an outlaw, a fugitive from King Saul who was trying to kill him. Then the next 7 years, he was caught up in the struggle of the civil war inside Israel. That's 17 years of hardship and danger and battle and bloodshed and sacrifice. Now, finally, he's acclaimed king of Israel. I don't know about you, but if I was David, I would have said, okay, God, it's good to finally be king. But after 17 years of this, I'm exhausted. I'm taking a little R&R, and then I'll come back and I'll be king. But David didn't do that. David just kept on fighting for God's honor. He never stopped fighting for God's honor. Why? Because God's honor was his highest priority. No sooner is he anointed king than he goes out and does battle once again after 17 years of battle. Because God's honor was his highest priority. Not his comfort, not his convenience. It was several years ago now, and I was serving at North Suburban Evangelical Free Church in Deerfield, and your interim pastor, your last interim pastor before me, Marty Voltz, that was his church. And a missionary had come home on furlough, and his name was Paul Till. And I took Paul Till out to lunch to get to know him a little bit. And I discovered this had been his home church. He'd actually grown up in this church. His wife and he got married in this church. His children were being raised in this church. He had a big, beautiful home in the Deerfield area. He had a very prestigious job. He was a superintendent in the school system. I mean, he had respect. He had the home. He had the beautiful family. He had a church he loved. Everything was going perfect for him. And I said, Paul, why did you throw all that away and uproot your family and move them to the Czech Republic where you were living in near poverty conditions in very difficult situation? And he said, well, you know, Dick, my wife and I prayed about it for several months, and it just came down to one question. We decided we could bring God more God glory in that place, in the Czech Republic, than the amount of glory we could bring him in Deerfield. Did you get his answer? It was all about where we could give God the most glory. Because God's honor was his highest priority. Now, it wasn't about the place. Not moving to the place of the Czech Republic isn't what gave God honor, although I think it did honor God that he sacrificed that much to do it. What was going to bring God honor was how Paul and his family lived every day in the Czech Republic. Would they live for the Lord in the Czech Republic and bringing him honor? And the same is true for you and I. Because God has put every one of us in a place where you live, where you work, where you go to school, where you shop. He has put you in a place where every day you have the opportunity to give him honor by the things that you say and the way that you treat other people, if that is your priority. If every day you are asking yourself, which decision will give God the greatest honor? Which words will give God the greatest honor? Which way of relating to these people will give God the greatest honor? And then you do those things. So is that really the way you live? Does the question of how can I best honor God in this situation a regular part of your everyday life? You say, Dick, how do I know I'm really living for God's honor, not just fooling myself? Well, ask yourself two questions that I believe come out of our story this morning. The first question to ask yourself to determine if God's honor is your priority is, am I actively defeating God's enemies? Am I actively defeating God's enemies? That was David's goal. The Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem worshipped many different pagan idols. But their primary god was a fertility god named Baal. And the worship of Baal included sexual acts with temple prostitutes. And in some times, especially in times of famine or drought or when the crops were bad, it included child sacrifice. These were not the kind of people you wanted living next door. And David wants to bring God honor by eliminating this pocket of religious perversion inside of the country of Israel. He wants to bring God honor by winning a great victory for the Lord that will earn respect from all of the surrounding nations. In other words, David is going to win God honor by fighting God's enemies. Would God say that you as an individual? Would God say we as LGNE Free as a Church are winning him honor because we are fighting God's enemies? We are surrounded by God's enemies all the time and every day. And some of those enemies are spiritual powers, demonic influences that blind people's minds, that cripple their hearts and lives, that spread lies, that enslave people in addictions. Are you fighting spiritual warfare against the forces of evil that try and keep people from Jesus Christ? And some of the enemies are just the result of living in a fallen world. Poverty and injustice and hunger and disease and racism and bigotry and hatred. And are you fighting God's enemies? Would God say that we are efficiently and effectively fighting and defeating his enemies in order to bring him honor? Because if you don't feel like you're in the fight, then you probably aren't. The second question to see if you're living for God's honor as your highest priority is to ask, am I uniting and protecting God's people? Am I uniting and protecting God's people? David inherited a kingdom that was just divided by rivalries between the tribes in the north and the tribes in the south. They just got done with a very difficult and prolonged civil war. David had to do something to try and unify the people so they would begin to think and act like a nation, one nation, rather than individual tribes. Now, if he put his capital city in either the north or the south, that would just increase the rivalry and the tension, right? So David wanted to put his capital city right on the border between the northern tribes and the southern tribes. Jerusalem was right on the border between the northern and southern tribes. And because it belonged to the Jebusites, not to the north and south, it was the perfect location for him to establish his capital and dedicate it to the Lord, so both symbolically and practically, it would help unify God's people. So are you raising God's honor by fighting to unify God's people? LGNE Free is in a time of transition. And I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years now. Pastoral transitions are times of stress and strain in a church. They're times when you're open to attack by the forces of evil that want to divide you and discourage you. Are you fighting to protect the unity of this church? Every day you have the opportunity to promote the unity of Elgin Evangelical Free Church by supportive words and actions, by encouraging, affirming words and actions. Are you fighting to protect that unity? Because every day you also have the opportunity to divide God's people by harsh words, by critical words, by gossip, by complaining and by blaming, rather than by affirming and encouraging and supporting and building up. Would God say that you're actively fighting to unify his people? But David was fighting for more than just to unify the people. He was fighting to protect them. You see, the Jebusites in Jerusalem were inside of the nation of Israel, but it wasn't part of the nation of Israel. It was an independent city-state filled with Israel's enemies right in the middle of the country. It's like a pocket of hostile resistance from which they could launch sneak attacks in the country. It would be like if there was an ISIS training camp in downstate Illinois. David wanted to eliminate that danger by eliminating the Jebusites in the middle of their country. He was fighting God's enemies to protect God's people from danger. And pastoral transitions are dangerous times. Are you fighting to protect God's people? Are you praying every day for this church, for it to be protected from spiritual warfare as Satan would try and get you to stumble and be discouraged or divided? Are you praying for the wisdom and protection for the leaders of this church, for the elders, for the deacons, for the staff, and for the ministry leaders? Are you praying every day for the pastoral search team that they would have the wisdom to find and recognize the man that God is preparing to be your next senior pastor. You should have received by email this week a copy of our prayer calendar that gives you just 90 seconds worth of things to pray for every day for this church. Are you doing that? And if you're not on the email one, you can pick up a hard copy there at the connections counter in the hallway. So that every day, if it's only 90 seconds, you can be praying for the unity and the protection of this church. So when you ask, is God's honor really my highest priority? The Lord asks, well, how efficiently and effectively are you fighting against my enemies? When's the last time you can remember a deep spiritual victory in your life and in your church? And are you efficiently and effectively fighting to unify and protect this people and this church? Because when we live those values, we will be men and women and a people after God's own heart, through which he can overcome great odds for his glory. The second step to overcoming great odds for God is to beat great odds, take great risks. To beat great odds, take great risks. You know the difference between a belief and a conviction? A belief is something you're willing to argue about. A conviction is something you're willing to die for. David was willing to die for his conviction of God's honor and glory in his attempt to capture Jerusalem, because David knew that sometimes to give God great glory, you've got to take great risks against great odds. How great were the odds? We read in the story, the Jebusites taunted David, saying, "You'll never get in here. Even the blind and the lame could keep you out." For the Jebusites thought they were safe, but David captured the fortress of Zion. The Jebusites had good reason to scoff at David's attempt to capture their city. It had never been done. It was against all the odds. It's called Mount Zion for a reason. It's on a mountain, a rock outcropping with a steep ravine on three sides, so you can't get to it from three sides, at least you couldn't in those days, and a strong wall all the way around it. As far as we know, Jerusalem had been there for 2,000 years before David and had never once been conquered. It was considered so impregnable that for several centuries, nobody had even tried to attack it. No wonder the Jebusites said even the blind and the lame could keep you out. And yet at the end of the verse, we're told David captured the fortress of Zion. Why? Because David knew that bring God great glory, sometimes you have to take great risks. And David was willing to take great risks against great odds to give God great glory. Does that describe your life? Does that describe Elgin Evangelical Free Church? God is not glorified by half-hearted attempts, by lukewarm love, and by low-risk enterprises. God is glorified when the church attempts things only God can do. When we take great risks against great odds, like the man of God David did for God's glory, so that when we win, everybody will know it wasn't us. It was God that did it. And the church that never takes great risks for God never gets to give God great glory. The person that never takes great risks to God never gets to give God great glory. It's when we tackle God-sized goals that only God can do. To beat great odds, you've got to take great risks. The third step, to reduce the risk, overcome great odds for God, reduce the risk by innovative planning. Reduce the risk by innovative planning. This is a great point. Chapter 5, verse 8, we read, David said, "Whoever attacks them should strike by going into the city through the water tunnel." Now, because Jerusalem had never been defeated, David knew from the past there was lots of things he couldn't do. He couldn't attack it frontally, a direct attack, or his men would be slaughtered. He couldn't surround it and lay siege and try and starve it out, because that had been tried and failed too. So David knew if he was going to defeat Jerusalem, he had to do something that had never been done before. He had to get creative. He had to think outside the box and come up with an innovative plan. And that's what David did. You see, the reason the Jebusites had survived all the attempts to put it under siege and starve it out before was they created a water tunnel. They dig down through solid rock underneath Jerusalem and then came out the side of Mount Zion to a spring so they could secretly get water into the city even in the middle of a war. Now, that tunnel was a secret. David found out about the secret. And he said, if they can get water up that tunnel, I can get soldiers up that tunnel. It was brilliant. It was an innovative plan. But once again, was this just Mission Impossible, or did it really happen? Well, let's go back to the Nova interview with Elat Mazar. And I'll read to you. In 2008, Mazar's team found the entrance of an extensive tunnel running under the stepped stone structure. Those are the pictures you saw earlier. Mazar believes that the tunnel was likely first created before the time of King David to convey water and then incorporated into the construction of his palace complex around 1000 BC. She says there is high probability that it is the water tunnel called Tisnor, the biblical story of David's conquest of Jerusalem in 2 Samuel chapter 5, what we're reading this morning. So behind that stepped wall, she found a water tunnel in the right time, in the right place. David could have used that. But actually, that's the second tunnel that's been found. Because 150 years ago, a man named Warren found another water tunnel dated to be in the right time and in the right place in the city of David, near David's palace. It's called Warren's Shaft. There's a picture that I took of Warren's Shaft. Now, it starts with a gradual descent. It turns a curve, then becomes a little more steep. Then it comes to a vertical shaft that drops 40 feet straight down through the rock. That's light coming out at the bottom of the 40-foot drop. And it comes out at a spring at the bottom. And you can visit that, and you can go down that shaft today. So what's the point here? There were two water shafts that are in the right place at the right time, and we don't know which one David used, but the fact is the water tunnels are there. This story really happened. David won because of an innovative plan. Now, why is this important? Because my 40 years experience as a pastor, my observation is churches that are healthy and growing, churches that are really having an impact on their community, they're innovative churches. Because they want so desperately to reach the Lord for Jesus, they're always trying new things. They're always experimenting with new ways and willing to say, we'll try this if it doesn't work. We'll try that if it doesn't work. We'll try something else. Why is it important to continually be trying new things? Because Satan's always trying new things. Satan's methods of warfare are changing, and our methods of fighting back have to change. And because the society around us, the culture around us is changing, and the way they can hear and understand the message is changing, and what they think their needs are before we get them to their spiritual needs is changing. So through the history of the churches, the methods have constantly changed. The message doesn't change, but the methods have constantly changed to be effective. You know, the pastoral search team is narrowing down the list of candidates. And some of the candidates are going to be asking, so you want to have an impact on the community of Elgin. How much are you willing to change? What are you willing to change? What are you willing to risk? What are you willing to give up? And they're going to be listening to our answers, and what they hear will decide if they think we're serious about being a church that's on mission, about making God's honor and pursuing His mission of reaching lost sheep our highest priority. Will we as leaders and we as a church be giving them the answer they're looking for? And when your new pastor arrives, he's going to have creative new ideas. He's going to say, let's try this, let's try that. And there are going to be things that you've never done before, and some of them might feel a little uncomfortable. And the question is, will you say, I don't like it, we're not going to do it? Or will you say, if this has a chance of helping us reach the next generation, if this has a chance of building a church for our children and grandchildren, if this has a chance of reaching more people for Jesus Christ, then let's try it. If there's nothing unbiblical about it, let's try it. To overcome great odds for God, you reduce the risk by innovative planning. Number four, to overcome great odds for God, stay alert for continued opposition. Stay alert for continued opposition. David won a great victory for the Lord. Did that solve all his problems? No, it created more problems. So we read, when the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king of Israel, they mobilized all their forces. This is the Philistines, not the Jebusites. They mobilized all their forces to capture him, but David was told they were coming, so he went into the stronghold. When David defeated the Jebusites, the Philistines, which was another nation that bordered Israel, said, okay, big guy, let's see how you do against us. Now, it actually sounds like they were out to kidnap or to assassinate him. But David found out, and he went to a place called the Stronghold. That's a mountain retreat where he was safe and the enemy didn't know about it. And there he met with God, and he listened to God and talked with God, and got his marching orders and went back out, and he defeated the Philistines. But the point was, after David fought a battle, won a great victory for God, when he was probably exhausted, he had to fight another battle, and then another battle. And haven't you found in your life you can win a battle, a spiritual victory in your personal life, even a great spiritual victory? And it doesn't bring you rest, it doesn't bring you safety, it's just followed up by more attacks. And too often in the Church of Jesus Christ, we have this big campaign, this big endeavor, we win a great victory, and then everybody goes, whew, I'm tired, that was really great, now let's back off and rest for a while. And when we do, we lose the momentum and we cede ground to the enemy. Because the truth is, when the Church of Jesus Christ is invading the kingdom of darkness and taking back territory, is charging hell and setting the captives free, then the forces of evil will counterattack. And so like David, we always have to stay alert to the opposition. We always have to be on guard. There is no time to let down your guard. There's no time to say, well, now we'll take a break off and we'll regroup and we would rather. Gang, we are in a fight for our spiritual lives as individuals and as a church, because we have an enemy who's like a roaring lion. And that fight will not end until the day we are with the Lord in His heavenly kingdom. Until that day, we must be warriors. Every day. Keep up our guard and keep up the battle. And don't expect it to slack off. The fifth and final step to overcome great odds for God is to give God the credit. If you're going to give God the honor, you give God the credit. The Lord did it, David exclaimed. He burst through my enemies like a raging flood. Now, everyone is cheering for this new young King David, but he says, it's not me, it was God. God did it. It was all by God. It was all for God. It was all about God. Because giving God the credit was the habit of David's life. When he was a teenager and he killed a lion and a bear with a slingshot, he said to King Saul, the Lord delivered them to me. When he squared off against the giant Goliath, he told Goliath, the Lord will defeat you, so everyone around will know there's a great God in Israel. Doesn't David's passion for giving God honor take your breath away? As I said before, the individual that never fights great battles for God's honor never gives God great glory. The church that never takes great risks against great gods for God's honor never gives God great glory. Oh, we may still talk about His glory and sing about His glory safe inside the church building, but God is looking for men and women who are fighting for His glory outside of the church building and in the community. Who are fighting against injustice, who are fighting against evil, who are fighting to spread the story of His glory, who are fighting to share His love and grace and salvation to a needy, hurting world in any way that we can. And the measure of the greatness of a church is not the number of ministries in a building, it's the number of ministers in the community. It's not the number of worshipers in the seats, it's the number of witnesses in the streets. We have all of eternity to praise God, but we only have now to show His praises to a needy, hurting world and win them to join us in praising God for all of eternity. But when you and I attempt great things for God, when we take great risks, and overcome great challenges by using innovative plans and give God the credit, there are three wonderful results. And the first result is that our victories for God earn respect. They earn respect. Chapter 5, verse 11, that King Hiram of Tyre sent messengers to David and they built him a palace. When the king of Tyre, which was just 50 miles down the road from Jerusalem, saw the great victory that Israel's God had given David, he said, I don't want that God to be my enemy. David, how about you and I be friends? Let's be buddies. I'd rather have that God on my side than be angry at me. So tell you what, let's build you a palace. Now, remember a few slides ago, the archaeologist of David's temple said that the temple was built by Phoenician craftsmen. Tyre was a town in Phoenicia. So once again, archaeology confirmed the Bible. And when you and I take great risks and win great victories for the Lord against great odds, when we win victories for the Lord and by the Lord, it earns the respect of people around us. Just like a few weeks ago when you helped Creekside Elementary School on their back-to-school night, that earned respect from people in our community. That's a beginning. That's a start. The next great benefit of giving God the credit is our victories for God strengthen us spiritually. They strengthen us spiritually. Chapter 5, verse 19. So David asked the Lord, should I go out to fight the Philistines? And the Lord replied to David, yes, go ahead. Now, David prayed and then went out to fight the Jebusites and he won. So what did he do before he fought the Philistines? He went to the stronghold and he prayed. What's happening? David is growing as a man of prayer. He's growing as a man of faith. He's growing as a man who can listen to God and obey God and trust God, even in difficult and dangerous circumstances. He is growing stronger spiritually because he's fighting for God's honor by fighting his enemies. Chapter 5, verse 10, and David became more and more powerful. Why? Because the Lord God of heaven's armies was with him. Seeing God work in him and through him increased David's ability to trust and depend on God. It increased his sensitivity to listen to God. It increased the value of his life of worship and his life of prayer. David is growing in his ability to listen to God, believe God, obey God, serve God, follow God. He is growing spiritually, and because he is growing spiritually and battling for God's honor, God is on his side and God is with him. It is only the experience of fighting for God's honor that strengthens us spiritually. Can I repeat that? It is the experience of fighting for God's honor that strengthens us fiercely spiritually, because it pushes our faith. It pushes our dependence. It strengthens our spiritual muscles. the person that is not fighting great battles for the Lord is probably not growing very much spiritually. The church that is not fighting great battles for the Lord is probably not growing very much spiritually. But like David, you have been part of a people of God who have taken great risks against great odds and won great victories for the Lord. You will then never settle again for spiritual complacency and mediocrity. You will never settle for being part of a church or a people of God that settles for anything less than being fully devoted to God's honor, a people that charges the gates of hell and sets the captives free, because you know that's what you were made for. And that's what gives you the spiritual adrenaline rush that keeps you going. Even when you carry the scars of battle along with you. Our final point. When we give God the credit, the third benefit is our victories for God set people free. They set people free. The very last verse said, and the Philistines abandoned their idols there. It was obvious that the Philistine gods weren't working. They were losing the battle badly, so they dropped their idols and they ran from the field of battle. David's men came and collected them and destroyed them. And that's what happens today. That's our job, to live for the Lord and to win so many battles that people drop their idols. Because when the watching world sees God's power at work in our life here in Elgin Evangelical Free Church, giving us a peace that they do not have, giving us a joy that they wish they had, giving us a hope in the face of death that they would give anything to have, giving us a purpose and meaning to our life that they are hungry for, they might drop their idols and ask about Jesus Christ and what he's done in our life. Gang, there's over 100,000 people within 15 miles of this building that have no relationship to Jesus Christ. They are hurling to a Christless eternity of agony. They desperately need Christ. We have the Christ they need. But the odds are stacked against us. We can't do it. It's impossible. Which makes it the perfect opportunity for us to take great risks against great odds to give God great glory. If we really believe His honor is our highest priority. The Bible is a story from beginning to end of God doing impossible things through very ordinary men and women. And today God is still looking for very ordinary men and women and churches through which He can do the impossible. For churches of men and women who have the heart of David, who are willing to take great risks and experiment with innovative plans, believing that's when we grow stronger spiritually, and that's how we give God glory. And that's our mission. And those are our values. God is looking for those people in that church. Can He count on you? You bow with me in prayer. Lord, forgive us for the times that Your honor has not been our highest priority. For the times that we have chosen safety over Your glory, when the times we have chosen comfort or convenience or personal preference over making You famous, we want to have the heart of David, to be men, women in a church after Your own heart. Lord, awaken a hunger and a passion in our hearts for Your glory, that knows no limits, that accepts any sacrifice, so that like David, we can look at Your work in our life, we can look at Your work in our church, and cry triumphantly, "The Lord did it." We ask it in Your name, Lord. We would go tell the world about You. Amen.